Hey everyone, this is Cameron from Renegade Animation on renegadepopculture.com. If you like what we do, please give us a like, a follow, and share our episodes around on Apple Podcast or wherever you listen to us. We are everywhere. Also, if you can, consider supporting our Patreon. That way we can keep doing what we love, and that's talking about the world of animation. And now, on with the show.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Renegade Animation on the Renegade Pop Culture Podcast Network. My name is Mike. I'll be your host for this evening. Joining me, as always, is the animation guru himself, Cameron.
Howdy, howdy.
And today we got a fun episode. We are talking about the latest season of Jellystone and a new adult animated series on Prime Video, The Second Best Hospital in the Galaxy. But first, we have not just one, but two indie pilots for this week, Indie Spotlight. Cameron, why don't you describe what we have?
Well, first off, congrats to the Wheels and Roses TV pilot Kickstarter for reaching its goal. And then the two we're going to talk about are Port by the Sea by Dearden Whitman and Mech West by Dave Gallagher. Boy, wait, it's like there are two very different types of shows, but they're also very similar to one another, and at least in terms of spirit.
I see what you mean about this. Like, stylistically, they're different. Obviously, one is 2D and the other is 3D animation, but they both have that kind of that sense of like adventure that it's stuff that we probably grew up with on either Cartoon Network or Nickelodeon.
So, like Port by the Sea, it obviously is more sea-based, where it's about two kids, Port and Umi, and their pet crab, Jolly Roger, as they attempt to find fallen pieces of a broken moon before an ancient deity can flood the world and ocean. The pilot follows the events of acquiring one of those pieces. It's got a really charming modern animation style to it, and it does a good job balancing the comedy and the mystery of it. It's like a Gravity Falls for more seafaring fans of the ocean and, sea shanties. It's got some really solid animation and a really touching tone to it, like a really good heart in the right place. And one of my favorite performances does come from Aaron Hansen, aka Ego Raptor, playing a few of the different characters there. Mech West is set in the Wild West, where these little steampunk robots are in this one Western town. This young woman finds a Gamech that does not run with coal. It runs on this new unknown energy. The thing that makes this one stand out, besides its steampunk Western aesthetic, is the fact that it's CGI animation. And you don't see a lot of those in the indie production pipeline as of right now. Most of them are trying to do the whole 2D animation thing, or try to take a style similar to like Jellystone, where you do kind of cool watercolor or pencil sketch up close character models to then do kind of like small chibi art styles from far away. And the CGI animation looks great.
It does.
Like, it does have like lighting and shadow work, which, not a lot of TV-based shows that are made in CGI can do that because of, the usual culprits of time and money. It's basically mostly set up if you had to quote unquote criticize it for anything, but it's got a lot of charm and personality to it that I definitely want to see more unfold with the mystery of this little mech that our main character is having to protect.
I like the community aspect of this little town of Meridian. It's very interesting how the people there sort of treat each of the mechs.
Yeah, there's like a definite like difference between how multiple people do. They either hate them, kind of push them around, or find their usefulness. I won't say Pearl is my favorite lead character of indie pilots, but I definitely want to see what happens to Pearl throughout this journey. I want to see her interact with like her brother Pico West and then Casey McCroy, the salesman, and there are definitely other characters and a very good mystery of what exactly is going on with the mechs and what this new mech named Six is powered by. While their viewing numbers for their first episodes are very impressive, once again, you're going to have to really support these shows because the creators of Monkey Wrench have talked about the residuals from YouTube views is no longer viable. So I know it gets tiring every time we have to talk about this, but these indie pilots cannot survive on their own. You really have to throw in the money, the viewership, sharing these episodes around. If they launch a Kickstarter to do animation work, then you back it. Because unless they are able to do a hell of a boss, a digital circus, or a lackadaisy, you're going to have to throw in the support and money to get them funded.
And really, every dollar counts. So even if you just throw in a dollar, you're still money going into the pot.
Just give these shows a watch. I definitely recommend both of them. Let's go back to the town of Jellystone, the other half of the one continent apparently this show takes place on, with New Bedrock taking up the other half. So we are on, quote unquote, season three. We haven't seen a new batch of episodes for this show in 2 years. And I was very worried that we weren't going to see any more of this show because, as much as people love to act like the Hanna-Barbera cast outside of Scooby-Doo are cherished, their relevancy is hard to come by with today's climate of animation. So I was very happy to see more of this show and from the creator of the show, C.H. Greensplat, were able to bring more episodes. And this is only apparently part one of quote unquote season three. And I told Mike this before the podcast started. There were moments where I was wondering if this show has kind of run its course, that they've hit every point that they could. And yet, every time you think they're done, they throw in a new bit of unhinged chaos into the mix that makes this still one of the funniest shows and like more quote unquote pure cartoony shows that are getting made right now.
This show, honestly, for me, is comfort food. And there's one name that I have to point out. I started noticing him a lot more in the credits. Maxwell Adams. He directed and wrote a handful of episodes in this batch of episodes. His contributions to like the humor and just the overall direction of the show can be felt.
Oh, yeah. No, his Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy and Hector Con Carne fingerprints are all over the episodes that he touches upon. They have that unhinged chaos to them in a show that's already pretty silly and out there with its comedy at points, especially when they do stuff like introduce a new section of Hanna-Barbera characters. My biggest problem with season one was the fact that they were mostly focusing on the animal characters, which is fine. You introduce them with these characters, with like Yogi Bear, Huckleberry Hound, and all that stuff. And then with season two to season three, they started to introduce more characters into the background, more speaking roles. And with season three, they finally hit a point where we are seeing the more human characters from Hanna-Barbera's library. With the first episode literally introducing us to the Jetsons and, well, Meet the Jetsons. And it's so fun to see what they are going to do with certain characters. And they pull in some very big deep cuts. Like, I don't think anyone will recognize the main character or antagonist of episode 2 in Disco Fever without having to actually dig into what show he showed up in.
I don't even think that character was a Hanna-Barbera original. I think it seemed like he was one of the old, one of like the last original Looney Tunes characters, at least from the name.
He's not. He's from a entirely different show.
Oh, okay.
He just happens to be named Cool Cat, which is, of course, the name of. That's what I mean by that. I had to look that up too because I was like, Cool Cat? Well, this is a very different take on the character. And then I looked it up. It was just an entirely different character. And that is so wild. It's like, how far and willing were they able to dig into the vault just to pull out entirely random characters from different parts of the overall franchise? I just think that's weird. It's like, it's funny because let's see here. Yeah, he's from Hey, It's the King from the CB Bears show from Hanna-Barbera Productions from 1977.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like there's a ton of different deep cuts in this show, and they finally do a reference to the Laugh Olympics. Granted, not with the same characters. I mean, Muttley's kind of an interchangeable character with this other character from the Laugh Olympics. It's that was kind of the thing with Hanna-Barbera from time to time. They would just have entirely similar characters compared to there was like no difference between them. They were clones.
They make fun of all the Scooby-Doo clones in the episode Frank and Hookie.
They introduced the Ghost Chasers and Goober. And it was interesting to see how willing they were to just dunk on half of these characters. Like half of one of the characters from the Ghost Chasers, Ted, voiced by Dana Snyder, when we see Goober, it's like, oh God, I forgot how much Goober sucks. And it's like, wow. Normally I would feel like you were not like given permission to dunk on your own company's brands like that, but that's kind of the thing with Hanna-Barbera. They made a lot of stuff. A lot of it wasn't good. And a lot of it was like this Ouroboros snake eating itself because they're trying to chase the trend of like one or two different shows. Listen, I know some hardcore Hanna-Barbera fans are going to be really quote unquote upset about how the really rottens were portrayed in the Episode 6 Laugh Games. But it's only the fact that only a handful of them get a name until the narrator is like, and the rest. Because do you really actually care? Like, unless you actually dig into who those characters were from, like what shows, you're not really going to know who they are. Even Robot Chicken's dark parody of the Laugh Olympics that combined it with Spielberg's Munich had one of the villains, this magician guy, be like, seriously, who am I? Are there really no other Hanna-Barbera villains for the really rottens? Who am I? And that's a lot of the humor that is in this show. It's not too self-hating and mean-spirited like you would see in Teen Titans Go. It's more like, we love this stuff, but we gotta be really honest about it. I mean, there are two episodes that stand out to me that I think are really fun. I think episode 11, Collection Protection, is delightful because it brings us Little Mitor, voiced by Sungwan Cho. I just think that's a very fun microcosm of what anime fandoms can feel like at times.
Yep, and they got a good voice actor to participate in that episode.
Oh yeah, no, I love Sung Wan's voice for the character. I think he does a delightful, like snooty but very nerdy portrayal of rival anime consumers. And I loved all the parody jokes of like the different shows and such, like overworked dad, that's relatable. And then, oh no, they're all dead. Coffins from this hit show.
What was the one about the guy who turned into a basketball shoe?
Oh yeah, it was just like I died and reincarnated, or like I fell into a coma and then got reincarnated as a shoe, and I am now a star basketball player for the Space Prince's team or something like that. And boy, ain't that like how half of the shows sound when you go through every anime season. There's like one that is scarily similar in title, which shows how much fun the creators are having with this show. Like they've turned Peter Potamus into less of a joke character and more into just like a harmless nerdy dork.
I noticed
Sorry.
that in both seasons 2 and 3, Peter gets a lot more development as a character.
Exactly. He's the, I can't believe I'm saying this. He's like the ideal anime fan. He's not gatekeepy. He's not like, check out this cool stuff. He's more like, hey, I want to show you all this cool stuff, and I hope you all like it. And like he says in the episode, anyone with a good heart can enjoy anime. And it's like, that's nice. For a show that can be very silly with its humor, it has moments where they have like a tender sequence, even though then they'll follow it up with in the first episode where they go through the time hole and Doggy Daddy is begging his daughter to be like, please do not eat the raisins. I know you want to, but do not eat the raisins. She's like, but I want to eat them. It's like, sweetie, you'll get really sick. AKA, in real life, you do not give dogs raisins. The episode that really stood out to a lot of people is episode 14, Space Con, where a comic book Comic Con like convention thing happens. And the special guests were Space Ghost. And the really distinct part of this iteration of Space Ghost is it's not just one version of Space Ghost. It's a little bit of the Hanna-Barbera version, and it's also a bit of the Space Ghost Coast to Coast version.
And the fact that they got George Lowe to reprise his role from Space Ghost Coast to Coast, that was awesome.
That was very funny. I had a laugh when they brought that back and they're like, can we get some ice cream? Small vanilla cones only. None of that fancy stuff. Everyone was saying, yes, that is how that character would say that line. And they do like different visual jokes and gags throughout this whole episode. It's very much an Adult Swim loving tribute to those early days when they were very much just taking Ruby Spears and Hanna-Barbera characters and doing wild adult things and mixing it with dry humor and such, or very irrelevant humor. But then it doesn't just stop though with George Lowe. I can't stop hearing his name and not think about that Aqua Teen Hunger Force episode where these aliens planted a huge radio tower in Carl's house and Frylock is going up there to try to stop it. And then they're just like, send down our henchmen. Yes. Send down voice actor George Lowe. And it's like literally George Lowe. They bring back Andy Merrill as Brack. That was the biggest surprise to me because I was looking forward to this new season. But to bring back Brack and to make him essentially the same Brack from Adult Swim, or at least that iteration, is so good. The introduction might be the best moment of comedy and animation
Oh, when
in this whole season.
Brack, Zorak, and Moltar just bust through the doors.
Yeah, bust through the doors doing this very, I think it's like a troll walk, like like troll face walk. Brack is just happy to be there. I love hearing Andy Merrill as him and love all the little jokes that come up, like when they're speaking about their overarching plan to take down Space Ghost. And Brack is just like, well, you know what? If that happened, that's just a nice cherry on top of things. Or like when they raid and disrupt the panel, he's just like, it's like we're sick and tired of you having more fans than us. Because we have fans. Clarence likes us, which, Cartoon Network 2010 deep cuts. It's like my mom likes us. Everyone who likes me tells me that. I got more fan mail in from Cartoon Planet because I'm so adorable. I love that little sequence. Apparently, it was improv by Andy himself.
Oh, I don't doubt that.
Especially with how Adult Swim shows were made back then. I'm sure a lot of that improv experience helped. But it doesn't even stop there from being just a great tribute to and loving homage to Space Ghost and Adult Swim with Coast to Coast. It ends on a great joke where Space Ghost, it's just like, wait a minute. It's like, those look like my power bracelets. And they just basically tell Space Ghost to his face that he's Peterpotamus. And he's just like, well, all right. He pulls up one of those anime body pillows. I'm Peter now. It's like, I guess I always was. Yeah, life was pretty okay like that. Sometimes I look in the stars and just wonder. Like, they had a lot of good closing punchlines for this show, and I found myself laughing constantly. I love when Inch High Private Eye tries to have the last line, and they're just like, we have to finish the episode. We don't have time for another moment. It's like, are you kidding? And then it cuts him off and goes to credits. This show is so charming, and I don't care that these aren't like 100% accurate to the original iterations of the characters. They're very blendable. The only reason they have an identity is that they were based off of or had comedic voices of people from that time period. People who no one is going to know about by this day.
Exactly.
Oh, and by the way, shout out to the frickin' cow and chicken reference.
Oh, yep. The red guy shows up.
Yeah, the red guy shows up, not voiced by the original actor, but Dana Snyder. Dana Snyder's pulling all the weight with this show because he's like playing like 15 different characters. And I just love that they brought him back. I would love to see more cartoon references because now it's like we are entering that point of we're running out of original Hanna-Barbera characters and now we have to kind of go into the 90s. And it kind of seems like that's what they're going to do because outside of maybe like Frankenstein Jr., they don't really have much else unless they want to bring in the rest of the Johnny Quest crew or all those other Ruby Spears productions, because otherwise there's not much else left.
I'm impressed that they managed to bring in as many Hanna-Barbera characters as possible.
And they technically have started with Ruby Spears production characters. Thundar the Barbarian shows up, and well, where else are they going to go? They essentially made fun of all the Scooby-Doo ripoffs and clones. They even had a cameo from the Scooby-Doo gang with Matthew Lillard, Frank Welker, and Kate Micucci reprising their speaking roles for the characters. It's interesting how you think they hit a wall, but then they don't. It's like they adapt to the fact that they are constantly almost hitting a wall with where they can go with these characters. And I think a lot of that is because of C.H. Greenblatt as the creator, because with him being the force behind Chowder, he knows how to rein in the cartoony nature of shows. I mean, that's why everyone loves Chowder now, because Chowder is full of so many just weird and silly moments that just make you laugh. And this show does a really good job of just making you laugh.
Yeah, pretty much. Do you have a favorite episode from season three? Because I've got a couple.
I still think Space Con is my favorite, but I do like Vote Raspberry because of how it makes fun of the whole political spectrum on both sides. And that's how we get our favorite, the red guy from Cow and Chicken reference. And I also like Jellystone Noir just because of how Run Lola Run it feels, with its
Yes.
like repeat of having the detectives constantly flashbacking into a flashback, into a flashback, into a flashback. Again, they keep doing it until it's at the breaking point, and then they stop. What are your favorite episodes?
Jellystone Noir is one of mine, but the other one is Lotions 11. This is where we get it's a Top Cat centric episode. And one of the gags that it sounds like it's going to get old quickly. They take that gag and just run and run with it.
The hat gag is so funny. Like, it's funny to see how all the different characters react to wearing the famous iconic Top Cat hat, and how one of them is just like, oh no, I'm not worthy. The other one is just willing to cause blood and chaos. And then what's his name
Benny.
gets it. And Benny just goes on an unhinged stalker fan tirade of just like, I am Top Cat. And they're like, yeah, man, you're Top Cat. I am Top Cat. Yeah, man, you sure are. I am Top Cat. Okay. It's about to go a little off the rails. And again, they let it keep happening until they stop. And it's just funny. Like, these are good iterations of the characters. And heck, if this gets people to buy those new recently released Blu-ray editions of those TV specials from Hanna-Barbera, then that'll be cool, because even though a lot of Hanna-Barbera's characters are very much a moment in time of their existence, you can still find them funny.
There's a lot of charm to all of these characters in their own sort of individual shorts and TV specials. But I think what I love about Jellystone is they find a new angle to breathe like new life into these characters.
I love this show, and I'm so glad it's back. I can't wait to see the rest of this quote unquote third season and where they go next. But that is it for our time in Jellystone, because we must blast off to the galaxy to, better have your health insurance, because we are heading to the second best hospital in the galaxy, which is our new adult animated show from Amazon Prime. It's interesting that Amazon Prime has led the charge so far this year with adult animation. Like, usually by this time we would have like a Netflix or a Hulu series to check out. But no, it's very much Amazon Prime. And what makes this show so distinct, what I like about this show, so it's a workplace comedy with adult characters, which, I mean, that's not too different from most adult animated series, but instead of just having like a place for these characters to bounce off of and have new shenanigans there, like Has Been Hotel or Paradise PD and such, what I like about this show is that whatever happens with the interpersonal character drama has to also deal with the location itself. It's not just thrown off to the side because they just needed a location.
The best way I can describe this show is, as far as being a workplace comedy, it has that same energy as shows like Scrubs or The Office, but without the documentary angle. But then, because this is also set in outer space with all these different alien creatures, it has a bit of that pulpy sci-fi flavor from like Futurama and, to a lesser extent, Rick and Morty. The focus is really on the characters.
Yeah, our main characters are played by Stephanie Soo and Kiki Palmer, who plays Dr. Sleech and Dr. Clack. who are just doctors in this one location. And I would say it's maybe a little more similar in tone to Futurama than Rick and Morty. Only because I know a lot of people are going to say this is like Rick and Morty light or whatever, but Rick and Morty's sci-fi stuff doesn't really have a set limit of where that sci-fi is going to go. They basically use the sci-fi angle to do all the crazy contraptions and worlds that they travel to. The second best hospital in the galaxy's sci-fi elements are very much a Star Trek-like situation.
I think maybe that's a better comparison, because the sci-fi element is, it's grounded in that the world feels lived in. It's still foreign enough that
it still has that whimsy to it. Now, I am going to compare this to Hazbin Hotel, because and no, they're not even very similar shows. I mean, I'm guessing thematically you could compare and contrast it, the two together, but mostly it's what the second best hospital does right with its 8 episodes compared to what has been failed to do. And I like both shows, but I think the second best hospital makes the landing more so than has been, because has been a focused so much on the main plot and every story point that you never got time to really get a feel for these characters. And it would do things like introduce side characters or background characters that the fandom would know. If you did a lot of homework, you would know. But you would not know if this was your first time watching the show. What the second best hospital does right is it has its overarching plot of what our two main characters are dealing with in terms of this worm-like entity that devours anxiety. But that overarching plot is never the full focus of the show.
They always leave just enough in like the background where the rest of the episodes remain pretty focused on the specific stories for that episode.
The show, and this is why I like it, and it's not new to adult animation, but the show's main focus is all about the interpersonal drama and relationships that each of the characters have with one another. And it's explored very much with our two main characters and their relationship, like with some of the other characters, including a bird-like alien voiced by Kieran Culkin and a multi-legged crab-like alien voiced by Sam Smith. Yes, the singer Sam Smith. And of course, since this is a Maya Rudolph and Natasha Lyonne produced show, Natasha Lyonne plays a secondary character as Nurse Tup, and Maya Rudolph plays a doctor named Dr. Vlam, a robot character. What makes this show enticing from episode one is not just what ignites the season one plot. It was this one little moment with Dr. Vlam where she's inside the mind of one patient and you get a real look at the consequences of being someone like Dr. Vlam, who is an immortal robot.
Oh, yeah.
Because she will continue to live, whereas everyone around her will not. And even though I kind of wish they returned to this plot point at another point in this season, I loved that it brings the existential dread of living forever compared to everyone else. And the other major plot is Kiki Palmer's character, Dr. Clack, dealing with some very unresolved issues with her mom and how her mom was either unknowing to her or she's just trying to play dumb, extremely emotionally manipulative of Dr. Clack when she was growing up. And it leads to some of the more interesting drama, because it always seems like it's a father-daughter, father-son drama. We never quite see daughter versus mom dynamics. And it's really hard to find examples where that specific dynamic is the driving force of a lot of the characters' unresolved trauma.
Yeah, I'm hard-pressed to find any other examples of that, but just the way done here, I found just utterly fascinating.
And then we have the commentary and, like, the question of, would Dr. Clack and Dr. Azel, Sam Smith's character, be... They're kind of like on an on-and-off romantic relationship during the first half of the season. And it's like, there's definitely a power dynamic difference between the two, because Dr. Azel is higher up on the pecking order to Dr. Clack. And then we have stuff like the relationship drama between Dr. Sleech and Kieran Culkin's character, Dr. Plop. I just loved the drama that unfolded with the Sleech and Plop's character dynamics, because Plop is, like, flawed, but overall a really sincere and nice person. He's not doing anything just to get something, because there's a difference between being genuinely nice and then being nice as a means of exchange.
Also, the fact that he's an empath leads to some very interesting story opportunities.
I mean, that's just what's so great about this show. It's interested in its characters. It's not just, let's put a bunch of one-trait characters in this open sandbox and see what happens. These characters have very much lived histories and relationships with other characters. Dr. Azel has to constantly deal with the commentary and themes of wanting to keep this hospital running and not let it get taken over by corporate desire and greed. They have to deal with a corporate CEO that is willing to give them money in return of letting the corporate side of things put their hand in the pie. And it just deals with the moral quandary about that. And I love that. I love that this show wants to go through a ton of different story beats and not just be hyper-violent, adult, shocking, gross, edgy, and whatever that you mostly get with adult animated series. This one actually wants you to feel invested, which is should be easier to do and make happen, but it seems to keep not being the case, where people just want the raunchy, punching down, mean-spirited stuff to be the driving force instead of its characters. Because if your show gets canceled, well then, and not just because it, like, a good show screwed over by a streaming site, I mean, like, a bad adult show, it's just going to be remembered being a bad show because I don't care about your characters.
Yeah, that's something that I really like about this show, that it being an adult animated series only goes as far as these characters are dealing with very adult problems and, like, relationships and all that. But it's not like there's excessive cursing, copious amounts of violence, although sometimes the show can get a bit graphic. But that's kind of par for the course with, like, even very basic medical dramas can have pretty graphic moments.
I mean, it's literally an animated medical drama, like, and pick your poison, whichever one you enjoy watching, like ER or whatever. It just has a more comedy slant to it, but it still balances it out with the drama. Like Dr. Sleech, you can tell that she's a very capable person, but she is also very insecure and not ready to be in a commitment of a romantic relationship where she can feel comfortable and safe dropping her guard. Kiki Palmer's character, Dr. Clack, is more worried about the legal and professional ramifications of dating other coworkers. It shouldn't feel refreshing to see a show like this build its experience around its characters, but it just feels good. And I'm so happy that Sirocco Dunlap was able to craft such an experience.
They did a great job with this series. I'm really happy with these first eight episodes. I hope the show continues because clearly there is more story to tell, as the final episode seems to indicate.
The whole overarching narrative of what happens with this worm that eats anxiety out of people results in like how, once again, big corporations ruin everything. Because the one that's in this show, basically, I think it's called like Una Everything or something like that.
Uni something.
Yeah, it's basically Amazon, Space Amazon, without it being called Amazon.
Umium.
Animation is also charming. I love these designs with this bright neon pop color to everything, mixed with maybe a dash of what feels like 90s sci-fi comic. Like, and not just like 90s Star Trek, Star Wars, or whatever sci-fi comics. I mean, like, the alternative stuff.
This was done by Titmouse, wasn't it?
Yeah, the animation was done by Titmouse, and even though you can tell it has a lot of those same adult animation cycles of just like how characters move and such, the character designs look great. They have a lot of fun, like everyone being aliens. There's no real human character, or at least they haven't introduced the concept of humans yet. So everyone's just an alien, and plus, that's fun. Who doesn't? Why would you want to see a human in a show essentially about alien?
Exactly.
Like we said, the voice cast is great. Maya Rudolph, Natasha Lyonne, Kiki Palmer, Stephanie Soo, Sam Smith, Kieran Culkin. It's a great ensemble cast, and it's one of the few times where I can see and hear the actors who have done some or little to no voice work before actually act and take the job seriously. Because I didn't know that one of them was Stephanie Soo until I looked it up. I didn't know one was Kiki Palmer. Sam Smith, and I'm not entirely sure if this is Sam Smith's first voice acting role or acting role in general, but they do a good job. Like, it's like going to be one of those things that unfortunately reinforces why having certain celebrity voice casts will work. But it's an example where, hey, not all of them are just going to play themselves. They're going to put in an actual performance because, that's what you do as an actor.
Out of all the on-screen actors, I think hiring comedians is probably the best option because Natasha Lyonne, for example, she slips right into that character, like almost getting lost in the role. Like, that's exactly what you want.
No, exactly. She's that cranky, like, I've been here way too long nurse that knows every in and out, but is still held there because no one else has given them another job offer. I do think what makes comedians work better as voice actors is the fact that a lot of them, outside of a rare few who are just not good at acting, are good at switching from funny to dramatic. That's why Mel Brooks liked Gene Wilder, because Gene Wilder could go from funny to serious at the drop of a dime. And that's what you need for a show like this that's going to combine comedy, that's going to combine drama and interpersonal character drama, and with all of these high concept sci-fi elements to them. It's such a good show. I was pleasantly surprised by the second best hospital in the galaxy.
I wasn't sure what to expect with this series, but after finishing it, I just came away just loving it.
Like, I could nitpick a little. I wish some of the character drama didn't flip-flop so easily, like Doctor like with Stephanie Soo's character and Kieran Culkin's character, their drama seems to just constantly be like flip-flopping when it just seems like, you know, they're kind of n made for each other. You know that. We know what's going to happen. But what makes it work is the fact that both characters are in the wrong because they've both done something that doesn't result in the healthiest relationship angle. So, as long as this show keeps doing stuff like that, it can keep doing the will they, won't they, or have the aromantic lead character, or do whatever. Like, I'm curious to see what this new corporate entity is going to do to the overall, like, level of stakes to the show if this gets a second season, and I hope it does. That I would love to see more of this show.
Same. I haven't looked at the numbers as far as viewership goes, but I hope that even just because of like the name recognition, that enough people are checking this out, because you will find yourself really enjoying this if you give it a chance.
I think the one thing I'm worried about is that, like, this show's not going to get traction only because, and I'm blaming Amazon for this, a lot of their adult content, whether it's live action or animated, is either very hyper violent or very much connected to the same viewer base as, like, for example, you would could say, like, The Boys and Invincible kind of have the same viewer base.
Oh, yeah, I see where you're going with this.
And while more fantasy based, Vox Machina and the upcoming Mighty Nein are very much connected to the hip with The Boys and Invincible. I'm worried the fact that this, and I forgot what the other adult animated series is called that they had on there, which I thought was really charming.
Not Fairfax.
No, yeah, Fairfax is the fact that they are not hyper-violent gore fests breaking down superhero tropes. I hope that the fact that they are not those types of shows does not hurt them, because for Amazon Prime to survive and thrive and not do stuff like cancel of our League season two is that I don't want their adult aimed audience content to be just action-packed, hyper-violent gore fests. It's really good, so they get away with it. But after a while, I think people are going to want to see something else. But we'll have, I don't know, I could be wrong. Viewerships and viewers are finicky people.
They are. So you really just have to be careful not to get typecast with a certain type of audience. But also, as an audience, you have to look for more diversity when it comes to adult animation.
And also, places like Amazon Prime need to support these kind of shows because they can't just be like, here's a show, no warning, and then be like, wow, what happened? Why don't people know about this show? I guess we'll cancel it. Click. Give the second best hospital in the galaxy a watch. I think it's a great adult drama, it's a great adult comedy. There's a lot to love about it. Do go check it out.
Yes, I second all of that.
And with that, we have. hit the end of the road for this episode, but we are currently working on two different episodes. We are going to be working on one where we talk about Kung Fu Panda 4. And yes, we will talk about the Megamind movie and the New York International Children's Film Festival episode. So we will see what happens first.
But until then, Cameron, where can everyone find you online?
You could find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Blue Sky at Cam's Eye View. I have my own website called camseyeview.biz where I review animated films and shows from around the world called The Other Side of Animation. And I also have a Patreon at patreon.com/camseyeview. That's where you can find me.
And you guys can find me on various social media sites at CaptainK42. You can check out my quick thoughts on letterboxd.com/CoachK42. And you can follow Renegade Pop Culture on Facebook and that place at Ren Pop Culture. You can also find us on YouTube, on Podchaser. Subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/RenegadePopCulture. Listen to all of our podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen. And last but not least, everything can be found at RenegadePopCulture.com. You need escape? So do we. That'll do it for this episode of Renegade Animation. We will catch you guys later. Peace out.